Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true? They don't think Christianity's true. They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
Ladies and gentlemen, is it okay to laugh as a Christian? Christianity has enough joyless scolds out there that you might think it's a sin to laugh. Well, if you think that, you don't want to listen to the show today or my guest today. He's been called God's comic by the New York Magazine. His style is frantic, aggressive, and caustic with echoes of Robin Williams, Sam Kinison, and George Carlin, who is his comedy hero. Who am I talking about? In fact, I've talked about Brad on my show before. I'm talking about Brad Stein, ladies and gentlemen. I've seen Brad's work over the years, and he and I just met a couple of weeks ago at the National Conference for Christian Apologetics, the best apologetics conference in the world, and Brad was the MC on the main stage. I was the MC on the boring stage, on the smaller stage. But Brad brought his own brand of humor and social commentary that nobody else brings to the stage. And he hates being called a Christian comedian, but he's a Christian who's a comic. And as I say, he's been called God's comic by New York Magazine. And let me just tell you a little bit more about Brad before he comes on. He's been in the New York Times, Christian Science Monitor, LA Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today. He's been featured on NBC Nightly News, HBO, Showtime, CNN, Glenn Beck, Hannity and Combs, NPR. And by the way, if you're low on the FM dial looking for NPR, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. That's our intent anyway. He's been on Nightline. He's been on MTV, Comedy Central. He's been in Reader's Digest. He's been on Focus on the Family magazine. He's been at the National Conference for Christian Apologetics. He's got several DVDs out. He has a book called Being a Christian Without Being an Idiot. And as you know, our show is focused on apologetics. That's what we're all about. The article in the New Yorker is well worth a read. It's called Stand Up for the Lord, How Funny Can a Christian Comedian Be? This man not only entertains, but he educates. So he'd be a great guy to have at your church, and it's great having him on. Brad, thanks for being with me.
You know, after that introduction, I don't know why I'm not more rich, because I sound like I must have done some amazing. I should be loaded. I was listening to that introduction going, I want to go see this guy. He must be amazing. And then I realized,
well, he
oh,
is.
Wait, it's me. Yeah, I know.
Hey,
And
you were doing quite a bit with Fox News for a while. You were on the Fox and Friends doing commentary, which I've seen a bunch on your website. And by the way, for those you haven't heard of Brad, right now, if you're not driving, you can go to his website, bradstein.com, Brad, STINE.com, all one word. And you can read about Brad. You can see several videos up there, short little YouTube clips. You can see his appearances on Fox and Friends. He actually spoke for 15 minutes at CPAC 2012, Conservative Political Action Committee, whatever CPAC is. I don't even know what it stands for. But it's where the conservatives get together, I think, every January or so in D.C. And Brad, let me just start by asking you this. You're an intelligent comedian who wants to bring the truth of Christianity to a hostile world, and you somehow became the MC at the best apologetics conference. How did that happen?
Well, you know, as you know, I use Judeo-Christian social commentary, the worldview as my social commentary. So, you know, they had asked, or somebody had inquired about, could you come out here and MC this, because what the guy that puts it all together said was, we wanted to try something different. We wanted to try something, you know, fun and bring a different flavor to this place. But we needed a guy that not only is a comic, but also understands apologetics and understands philosophy and understands worldview and understands reason and logic. And, you know, that combination in the comedy field is quite rare, I might add. Not easy,
yeah,
to find somebody that fits that particular mold. And as you know, he looked around, he realized actually there is only one guy that does that, and that's me. So you know, so in that regard, it was great. I have a monopoly on the intellectual pursuit of comedy using my point of view. But, you know, unfortunately, not everybody, you know, wants that, frankly. They might want something that's really goofball and cheesy, and that's not what I'm into. I want to compete at the highest levels of the intellect as a comic, but also, you know, be able to bring great humor to people and laughter. And so, you know, they offered it to me, and I, of course, immediately went into the attic, you know, rent my clothes, went into my ashes and loincloth and prayed. And the only problem I was getting was they said, you know, the Lord was saying, you know, Frank Turek's going to be there, and so you're going to have to avoid him at all costs. And I said, yes,
that's
yes,
right.
Father, I will do that. But somehow you found me. And so I you know, I prayed to God for wisdom, and he said, all right, I'll give you great favor that you can endure, Frank. And somehow we did. we made it through each other and had a great time.
Yeah, you had all the people in your venue. I had nobody in mine. Frank, be funny.
Yes.
Well, no, that you got to go to the other venue for that. But now I want to play a little bit of word association with you. I'll say a word or a phrase, and then you give me your commentary on it. You ready? By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this has not been rehearsed. Okay, he doesn't even know what I'm going to say. You ready to go?
Well, listen, I haven't even gotten out of bed yet. Just to let you know, I'm actually just woke up about 2 minutes ago. I'm in my underpants with the phone against my ear, and I might doze off. I just want to let you know what could happen at any point.
All right. Well, that's unfortunately the reputation many Christian comics have. We doze off listening to them, but not you.
No.
I think Steve Doocy said that man does not need another cup of coffee.
No, that's true. I mean, even caffeine gets around me, gets jittery. So that's something that's seriously unique about what I'm doing.
All right. Let me just start at the top. All right. I'm going to start at the top
What exactly are we doing? This one on, so this is kind of like a Freudian thing. It's some kind of, we're going into some deep psychoanalysis elements of, you're going to give me a word and somehow I'm supposed to understand and commentate on that particular
commentate
word.
On the word. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen tuning in, you know, normally know there are commercials on this show. No commercials, actually public service announcements. We're just going straight through.
I insisted on that. I said, commercials. I want all the money to go right to me. That's what I want. And, of course, you said, of course, Your Honor. I think you called me Your Honor twice. Which
something like that. All right. You ready? Here we go. Tolerance.
Yes.
Tolerance.
Yes. Well, yes, tolerance. You know, the whole idea of tolerance, of course, is a misnomer because it doesn't actually exist. See, this is what we find out. It's the misuse of words that is destroying liberty in America. What do I mean by that? Well, if the word tolerance actually was used as it is meant to be used, by definition, it's simply being able to accept and endure and allow and dignify a point of view that you disagree with. That's actual tolerance. So then one has to say, is that actually happening in the real world? And it's not. How do we know that? Do people do the exact same thing to you that you do to them, but they define themselves differently? For example, if I was to say to you, I think that behavior is immoral. What does that make me? Hateful. You're a hateful. Okay, you think what I'm saying is immoral. What does that make you? Loving. Loving.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. So I think that some things are better than other things. Intolerance. Well, but wait, you think that your point of view is better than I think. It's because I'm open-minded. So my point is, we live in a world where people redefine what they do to me as a altruistic thing, and they define what I do as a malicious thing. So it's very simple, and we don't get a lot of Christians that understand this. I know you do, because I know this is what you're all about. But you know, let me explain something to you Christians out there. Every time somebody calls you a bigot, remember, they are being bigoted at that moment. They are, in fact, being a bigot themselves, which means this. They don't really hate bigotry. They only hate your point of view. So the terms are always used. Tolerance is always used to censor, not to enlighten. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And in fact, I remember you were at CPAC, and folks who are listening, you can watch what Brad did. We're talking to Brad Stein, his website, bradstein.com. If you go there, you can see his CPAC talk. And you said this in your CPAC talk. You were talking about political correctness and tolerance, and you basically said that such people on the left create a counterfeit reality, and then they demand you worship it.
Yes, that's exactly true. Well, you know, listen,
unpack
it's just
that.
It's like this. It's like this. See, what Christians have done so idiotically in America is they haven't stood for truth. They say they believe in their faith, but that's not good enough. You have to believe that it is true, not your truth or a truth. It is actually true, the truth from which truth derives. And if you believe that there is such a thing as absolute immutable truth, then you would have no problem to stand for it, to live for it, and to speak about it in public. Matter of fact, you'd have no option. So the idea is simply this. We have a world where if you're a guy and think you're a girl, you are. So somehow the progressive apparently has learned a magic trick. Their lives are a magic trick. I'm a guy, but now I'm a girl proof. I'm a girl. And, I'm pregnant. If I want it, it's a baby. If I don't, it's just a bunch of tissue. Poof. Magic. Whatever I desire becomes true, becomes my right. Now, here's what I want to make you understand, my friends, unless you don't believe in freedom. You have been given the liberty by others much braver than us to live in a fantasy if you want to in America. What you don't have the liberty to do is make me live there with you. That is stealing my liberties. And so what we have is this idea that if I create a utopian vision, remember this. Remember what happens. These same people, the progressives, are the ones that can never fix anything because they don't know what the problem is. These are the people that are saying, ban guns, ban guns, ban guns. When has banning anything ever worked? You know, we banned liquor once in this country. Oh, that worked like a charm, didn't it? You couldn't find a gin martini in the roaring 20s. It was unheard of. No, the point of the matter is, if banning actually worked, then why don't we cut to the chase? I know. Let's ban crime. Okay? Is it that easy? Well, let's ban stealing. Well, I was going to shoot that guy, but apparently it's illegal now. Guess I'm going to have to turn to a life of labor. So, you know, the whole point that I'm trying to make is simply this. You have to understand that banning is the religious response by a secularist. In other words, the only way you change behavior is changing hearts, because we happen to know as Christians that people are intrinsically evil, because they don't believe that on the progressive left. They believe we're intrinsically good. They simply say if we simply remove elements and artifacts from their vicinity that could cause them to do something evil, then life will be good. Now, this isn't true. We have absolute proof of that. I mean, for example, just taking the guns, and I wasn't trying to get on a gun thing, but if you look at every totalitarian regime in the history of the world, the first thing they do, they disarm their citizens every time.
So and not only that, all of these shoot 'em up places, all these terrible events that occur, whether it's at a recruiting station or in a college or a high school, they're all gun-free zones. Why don't we just advertise there's nobody there to defend themselves? It's just ridiculous.
And I think that kind of proves my point. If you call something a gun-free zone, what are you doing? You are banning guns from that vicinity. Well, then how come people keep getting shot? Why aren't the banning zone? Why don't they stand? Oh darn it! I didn't know. Can I hit somebody with a lead pipe? Is it a lead pipe free zone? Can I use a slingshot? Is it a slingshot? Which weapon can I use to arbitrarily hurt people? See, this is exactly my point. We actually have physical empirical evidence that the ideas don't work. But remember, the difference between Christianity and every other belief system is Christianity is true. Because it's true, we can actually look at the world as it really is and make actual decisions that would be helpful and productive, because we know people are evil. We have to have, and the founding fathers did as well, intrinsically. That's why they created, by the way, checks and balances. That's why we have the three systems of government in the sections of government in our government, because the founding fathers knew that people are evil. So they would need potentially someone who could stop someone who got onto a pride or ego-driven, you know, a power trip and started to take over tyrannically. That could be stopped because we have other branches to equal things out. So again, pragmatic, true, and workable. What happens when things go south? We change the rules. If I want, see, they live by a world that whatever they want the world to be like, they believe it is. See, when I don't, I live by truth, okay? So when what I believe conflicts with the truth, I change my belief. When a progressive, what he believes conflicts with the truth, he changes the truth. That's the difference. That's why relativism has to be the day in the academic world. There cannot be immutable truth, or we can't change it and manipulate it so that we can do what everybody does with every choice and decision. Power.
You're listening to... You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network. My guest today is Brad Stein, God's comic, according to New Yorker Magazine, and his website, bradstein.com, Brad, STINE.com. He's not only a great comic, but he's a great commentator on what's going on in America, what's going on in our churches. And so he'd be a great guy to bring into your church at some point. In fact, Brad, you did a lot of work, because I saw you at Promise Keepers back with, must have been 07, 08, with my buddy Bob Cornuke. You and he were both at a Promise Keepers event in Columbia. You've spoken to thousands of people. You did that for so many years. And you've got several DVDs out. One is called Put a Helmet On. Another's called Wussification. You've got several others. You've got a book out. I mean, you're out there. If people are interested in actually bringing you to their venue, where do they go? Do they just go to the website?
Yeah, well, the best place to go would be to bradstein.com, because, number one, it shows where I'm going to be. So if I happen to be in your area, you can come see it if you want to see it live. If you want to bring me in to form, there's a contact button there, so you can actually go that direction. And the thing is, you know, the longer I've done comedy, the more I've seen where my nation is heading. And I really kind of, God sort of began to evolve, if I'm allowed to say evolve on your show. He started to evolve my thoughts of what my comedy was for. And what I realized was, Frank, is that when you really break it down, you know, what is my gift? It's not comedy, even though I can do that. I'm a communicator. That's what God gifted me with. That's why I do things other than just comedy. I'm making a documentary right now on between the Israel-Palestinian issue, and actually I've been doing interviews, and we'll be in Israel at the end of November doing interviews. So, but again, it's a human commentation on this very serious issue, because what God gifted me in is how to laymanize hard ideas for the person that's not interested in philosophy or apologetics. I want to present ideas that actually infiltrate their spirit and make them go, wow, I never thought of that. I didn't understand that. Hopefully to make them want to go educate themselves and learn more on their own, but also at least to give them an objective perspective of a concept that they have not been able to see because of the presuppositional filter that they've already decided what they believe and consequently don't have access to either any other idea. So that's what I do. Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, when you do it with humor, too, it cements it in their minds. They may not be open to an idea or remember an idea if you just say it to them just as you would in a conversation. But if you're up on stage and you're doing it and folding humor into it, they remember that. And so it then has a better chance of making a difference in their lives.
Well, that's the power of humor. I mean, we were the jesters. We were the ones that could make fun of the king and not get our heads cut off. You know, comedy is a crucial element of culture, because it does allow us to deal with hard issues in a way that is more palatable and more able to be received or heard or listened to. That's why it's so crucial that the First Amendment is not breached. That we need to have access to these ideas and these thoughts. I even do a different show now. I added another show. I'm getting prepared to do my next comedy album to shoot, and that's how old school I am. I still call it an album. But all the kids nowadays go, what does that mean? It's like a giant CD.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Can I download it?
Yeah, it's like a giant CD, basically. But they don't understand. But my point is I'm doing it. But I also created another show because I saw the New Atheists and the power that they were deriving from their talks. I saw TED Talks. And remember, TED Talks are very cool. But think about what they did. This is a secular version of church. They have taken good information, interesting stuff. They packaged it into an artistic format and gave people a sense that if you go here, you're one of the intellectual elite. You're one of the cool, artsy folks that need to attend. So does that mean that the church should do the same thing or that we should try to compete? No, we don't have to compete. We create. God gave us these techniques in the first place. We should be the ones that actually set the standard for this. So I created a show called The God Experience. And what I do is, it's kind of like a TED Talk about God. I share the idea, basically, that I think a lot of the problems that atheists have with God is that they say there's no evidence. And I say, well, let's just stop for a second and think, if God were real, what would his attributes be? He would be able to be in every single dimension that exists simultaneously. He would be able to know everything there is to know, and whatever he wants to do, he can do. Now, if that entity existed, don't you think we might not necessarily have access to it the same way we do with our five senses and three-dimensional material objects? Don't you think that type of a being might be a little bit unique? So what I say is I believe God gives us clues to find him because he's too big just to be revealed in a way that we're used to. And so I created this experience using philosophy, apologetics, but it's humorous. But I also do sleight of hand. I do all these sort of unique visual elements that also make it an artistic, almost off-Broadway feel for a search for God. So I can come into a church and do a comedy night on a Saturday night, and you bring your non-believing friends, so they're going to hear, you know, truth and comedy in a Christian environment that they didn't know could exist. And then I can say, but come back tomorrow on Sunday. I'm going to give you the God experience. I'm actually going to give you the meaning of life. And then I do this artistic presentation. So again, the message of Jesus never changes. The messenger does. And sometimes he looks like me. So that's how pathetic things have become, Frank. That is how, when God had to say, you know what, I don't know what to do. I guess we have to resort to Stein. That's how bad it's gotten in America. We used to have Thomas Aquinas. We used to have Augustine, C.S. Lewis. I guess I got to go to the stand-up comic now, thanks to all those apologetic dorks that aren't even going to seminary anymore. So it's okay. God's that way. He's unique. He's constantly able to, you know, use whatever is necessary for each season in human experience to reach people in a way that they're going to hear.
All right, bradstein.com is where you need to go if you're interested to find out more about Brad. Again, Bradstein, STINE.com. And you go there, you'll see a ton of videos, friends. You'll see YouTube videos. You'll see all of his products up there. You'll see his bio. You'll get an idea of who Brad is in case you hadn't heard of him now. Great guy to bring into a church. Okay, more word association, or at least phrase association, Brad. Here we go. Brad, you're a hater if you don't support same-sex marriage. A hater. You're a hater, Brad.
Exactly. Once again, you're a hater for hate. Again, how stupid have Americans become that they allow someone to maliciously attack them personally when something isn't even true? First thing you have to analyze is it true? Let me tell you something, my friends. If you think you're having a conversation with somebody and that person does not enlighten, but in fact actually simply attacks, you're not having a conversation. You're wasting your time. Believe it. God said at times, dust it, you know, wipe the dust off your feet, move on. See, for me, that's why I rarely go on the internet and confront some of these folks that come onto my pages and whatever. It's not because I'm afraid to, but it's too difficult because I'm not interested, frankly, in having a conversation with somebody who's not interested in truth, that isn't
right.
interested in enlightenment. If you literally say, let's just explore this, that's fun, that's exciting, that's important. But if you're simply going to call me names, then you obviously don't have ammunition. You're either uneducated, and that can be changed. You can get educated. Or you simply despise my point of view and want to destroy it. And that's why the hating thing doesn't work. Fake was another one. Phobia is an irrational fear.
If you're a hater because you disagree with them, then by definition, they're a hater because they disagree with you. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, that's exactly, and that's exactly why what I spoke of earlier about the bigotry thing. You know, bigotry is simply to be absolutely intolerant of somebody else's point of view, or somebody else's behavior, or somebody else's lineage. To be absolutely intolerant of that. Well, so the moment somebody says you're bigoted based on something that you believe, they're a bigot. So once again, they apparently now they want me to assume that bigotry is bad, but yet they just used a bigoted point of view to stifle me. So actually, it's not bigotry they hate. It's they use it as a weapon. It's not hatred
right.
that they hate. It's not hatred that they hate as long as they use it. Why? Because they always define what they do altruistically. They're doing exactly
right.
the same thing, but they're going to give themselves a positive perspective as to why they deliver this, and I got a negative one. Phobia was another one. You know, irrational fear. You're homophobic. I'm not homophobic. I don't fear anybody. I love people. I have gay family members. I've never had known them for 20 years. My family has spent many days with them. So I'm not a phobic. I actually have proof that I have no phobia against them, which to me means that if I can prove that it's not true and explain that to you, that my interactions with gay people have been nothing but, you know, positive, and though I don't agree with behavior, then to me, to have that information revealed to you, and you continue to slander me, should be illegal, because you're basically taking a point of view and causing it to be called something that is hateful and evil, which basically is what people use in these these hate crime concepts or hate words. So I don't have any phobia. That's not true. I have two phobias. I have phobia, which is the fear of not being afraid, and I also have phobia, which is the fear of not being able to pronounce words correct. But other than that, I'm in good shape. Yeah, so I'm okay. I have no phobias. I hate no one, you know. And here's what I love, Frank. I love when people that despise my religion try to use its morality against
me. Oh, yeah.
They don't even believe in it, but they'll say, like, Christians aren't supposed to offend anybody. And I'm going, well, then apparently you know nothing of my religion. No. We're not allowed to maliciously offend people. Honestly, not allowed to think I'm better than you because I'm not. Not allowed to think God likes me more. He doesn't. Not allowed to think that you can't get into heaven because you can. Trust me, the only reason I'm a Christian, it's the only religion that would have me. Okay? That's just the way it's going to be. I tried everybody. Can I join you? No bacon. I'm out. What kind of God would deny me a BLT? I'm gone. But let me tell you something, America. If the truth offends you, that's your problem. You see, the truth is supposed to offend you. That's how you know you don't have it. It used to be called your conscience, and the reason why we cannot believe in truth in academia. The moment there is truth, then we are responsible for our behavior.
Yeah, the elephant in the room is not truth. The elephant in the room is morality and accountability. Nobody wants it. That's why they suppress the truth and unrighteousness. And let me ask you about that, Brad. I'm about to go to the University of Michigan next week. I go to a lot of college campuses and present. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist there. For those of you in the Michigan area, I'll be at the University of Michigan on November 5th, the night. It's Thursday night. November 5th. You go to the website, crossexamine.org, to figure out more about it. But Jerry Seinfeld said something recently. I know you probably know about this, Brad. He said he won't go to a college campus anymore and do his routine because political correctness has overrun the campus so much that any joke that he tells, somebody's going to be offended by and want to kick him off campus. Have you found that? I mean, can you still go to a college campus and perform?
Yes, only campuses for the deaf, though, unfortunately. they have to be deaf. Oh, and blind, too, by the way, because I can't hold them to read.
Right. Okay.
So all the universities founded by Helen Keller, I'm a big hit. Listen, obviously I can go to Christian universities because, yeah. They understand my point of view. I would like to do more, in colleges, and years ago I did them before I was adding some of my apologetic elements to it and whatever. I'd go into colleges, but I remember, you know, years ago beginning to see this was probably back in even 1988. I remember doing a joke about shopping, and saying, you know, women like to shop or something as simple as that. And kind of getting some, like, girls go, boo. And I'm thinking in my mind, this is 88. Long time ago. What is the problem? Obviously, women like to shop. And everybody knows that. And it was my first sort of really understanding what political correctness was going to do. Because it allows you to live in a fantasy. Again, it doesn't matter what is true. It matters what I want to be true. That's going to,
right,
you know, save the day. So I would love to go into these campuses because the thing that even bothers me even more so, and, you know, and I don't even know how it can get any worse, because any stealing of liberty to me needs to be destroyed immediately. Because that's the greatest thing the Founding Fathers gave us. First line of the First Amendment, because it's the protection of your conscience. Not even just a religious point of view, that's how it's framed. Your conscience, for atheists, for pagans, all of you, if this is how you see and want to live, you have access to that, and it can't be outlawed. And that, to me, is what makes... And think about it, by the way, Frank, which is exactly what God did in the beginning. He gave us the ability to know the truth and the ability to choose the lies. So the America sort of founded on the idea that we have to give you the free will to disregard in order to know that you're free, in order to know that you have access to freedom. So I would like to go into these colleges and teach these kids, listen, you don't have to like what I do or agree with it or whatever. That's what, you know, welcome to liberty and freedom. Everybody has their points of view. But you don't understand that you are being treated like a child.
Right.
See, what kids don't understand is the first time they go to university, they think that they're finally thinking for the first time. They finally have access to deeper ideas than they've had before. They're outside of their parents' domain, so they feel kind of this freedom, this autonomy, and sometimes this sort of maverick approach to their life, like maybe it's time to step out and try stuff I wouldn't have done before. Oh, that's fine. That's part of the human experience. But they also think that they're smarter than everybody else now. They're given this sort of idea that these deeper ideas and thoughts that you never got in at home are now given to you, and you have access to them. And they get very passionate about it. Hey, I understand, and I'm all about freedom, and there's, you know, we got to be multicultural and all this Marxist junk that they just buy into, hook, line, and sinker. But what they don't realize is how they are being
indoctrinated and
manipulated, because what they're doing, Frank, is they're saying to them, if you don't like an idea, you can censor it. You can outlaw it. If you can't see how incredibly immature and how incredibly cowardly, how incredibly spineless, how amazingly insipid and valueless this point of view is, and they're turning you into basically an intolerant bigot by believing that you're open-minded. If you can't see that, then you're not even close to being as smart as you thought you were. I would be outraged as a 19, 20-year-old to realize that I've been manipulated. They've stolen my freedom in the course of pretending to give me deeper understanding, and I've fallen for it because, frankly, I'm still young, impressionable, and stupid. I don't have enough information to look at these ideas perspective and go, I don't buy into this. Again, the church should be teaching their kids these philosophical concepts and ideas so that when they go, they can immediately see the counterfeit.
We're talking to my friend Brad Stein, his website, bradstein.com, S-T-I-N-E. You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network. We're commercial-free this hour because we didn't want to interrupt Brad, and I didn't want to interrupt him because I like listening to him. And so we're just commercial-free, so I'm just jumping in to let you know what you're listening to. And Brad, you know, you talked earlier about this, creating this reality that the liberals create for themselves, the politically correct create for themselves, and then they expect you to live in that reality. These, Brad, these are the same people who say they're scientific. They're all about science, yet they're the ones saying that they can change their gender, but they can't change their sexual behavior. And these are the same people. I've noticed this. I've noticed that people on the left want to change reality to fit their behavior, whereas conservatives want to change our behavior to fit reality. I mean, these people are totally living in an alternate universe, and what you just said about the college campus needs to be amplified over and over again, because they're not being taught how to deal with reality. They're being taught how to create their own reality and then try and get everybody to live in it. It's just crazy, and I think the church is largely to blame.
It certainly has not done its job. I mean, but and you know the nasty truth, right? The nasty truth is if the church was in America, I always qualify it with in America because we have a very unique place in our legacy and tradition of Christianity, because we actually were founded by Christians who wanted the freedom of Christianity to rule. That's not true in all places. If I was in Syria as a Christian, or Iran right now, or China, or North Korea, I'd have a different perspective and approach, because I'm in a different culture that hates me, wants to kill me. So I'd have to do things differently. But I still live in a country, it's hanging on my thread, but a country that gives me freedom of speech. So that's a unique place, and so I need to qualify it that way. But here's the truth. The church initially was started simply as a means for the body of Christ to come and learn and grow in community about the ideas of God and what he wants us to give back to culture, and to redeem those who are outside of his will. That was what it was for. It was never supposed, it's just like politics. It was never supposed to be a job. The pastor was not supposed to be a job. It wasn't supposed to be something that you did to make people happy and comfortable. It's supposed to speak truth. And so, of course, in America, where we believe in capitalism, we believe in free enterprise, we believe in the ideas that, you know, whatever is the best idea should win the day, we have kind of morphed our church into little businesses. And I'm not saying it was done with malice, or that the pastors aren't good people or don't care about people's soul. I know they do. But truly, if they're not teaching logic and reason, which, again, is a legacy of Christianity, if they're not teaching how to behave and into culture and how to articulate your point of view, if they're not teaching sexual elements about how beautiful and sacred it is, and how beautiful it is, and that you could engage in it and indulge in it as much as you can in the proper holy confines of marriage, if we're not showing these articulate ways to perceive how God has given us access to truth, again, the only religion where it says, you know, come let us reason together, the only religion that says love your enemy, pray for those that despitefully use you, there's never been a religion like that, because Christianity is true. It actually reflects God. So if the church doesn't do those things, then we aren't equipping our people. And if they did do those things, the churches would begin to diminish in numbers. And so that's okay. I think that's probably what's happening in America now anyway, is we have way too many churchgoers and not enough Christians. The true Christians, whenever they've been oppressed, the true Christians, whenever they were put in a position of where people were antagonistic toward them, always thrived, always won the day, always brought amazing virtue and healing to the culture. People look at somebody and go, man, look how they're treated, and yet look how they respond. Look what they, oh, look, there's a black plague. Let's get out of here. Why are these Christians sticking around and tending to these people? Hey, look, here's a baby. Let's throw it in a sewer like they did in the Roman times when they didn't want to. What are these Christians protecting these babies? There's no value to human life that's intrinsic. Christians have the legacy of changing the thought of the world in what we now call Western culture. So why is Christianity the single most attacked belief system on earth right now based on the Pew Foundation? Why isn't it Islam? Why isn't it atheism, because Christianity is dangerous because it's true.
And yeah, it's true. Must die.
The only weapon, the only enemy, Jesus said, we will have, will be lies. Will be lies. Mm-hmm. We will. You'll either live in truth or you'll live in lies. And that's why we are nice to those who don't believe, because they are blind. We have to treat them like they're disabled and try to grab their hand and walk them around so they don't hit their head on the pole sticking out because they can't see me. But that is what we're dealing with in America.
If the truth will set you free, the antithesis of that, not knowing the truth, will put you in slavery, in bondage, and that's where we are. Many people are in bondage to their own sins, their own desires, and they don't realize that the ultimate meaning of life is to know God and to make him known. And one of the things Brad does when he comes to your church or your campus is he puts all that in a fun, engaging, entertaining way. And you don't need to take my word for it. You can go to his website, bradstein.com, and you can see some of these videos of him performing. And then make up your own mind. But I'm telling you, he's a great guy to bring in. And he emceed our apologetics conference just a couple of weeks ago, did a wonderful job there. So check him out, bradstein.com. And, Brad, I mentioned I saw you, it must be 8 years ago now. It's like 07 or 08. You did a lot of work for Promise Keepers. You spoke to thousands of people at Promise Keepers. You were down in Columbia with my friend Bob Cornuke. And I remember you talking about, I think you were in Ephesians. You were talking about how men need to step up. And one of the great problems we have, not only in the church, but also in our culture, of course, is fatherlessness and men not taking a leadership role. And you were talking about how men need to be warriors. And that really stuck with me. I mean, it was a comedy routine, but obviously it made an impression on me because I remember it. I don't remember many sermons, tell you the truth, and that really wasn't a sermon. It was more of a performance, but it had truth in it that I would remember. Talk about wussification. You actually have a DVD on that. Wussification, the wussification of the American male, the wussification of America. What is that?
Wussification really is kind of a silly word that I think I coined, it was just basically the whole idea of what you could call tenderizing the masculinity, feminizing it perhaps. Now, of course, that's always a dangerous thing to say. What are you, some misogynist? No, but at least I know big words. Okay, but no, I'm not a misogynist.
You married a woman, didn't you? Did you marry a woman?
Well, you know, that's the point. That's the point. They told me to find my feminine side, and I did. And I married her. I'm good. This is what happened. I remember growing up where they said, you know, this woman began to play with the fluidity of gender. Oh, yeah, you know, it's really just this cultural conventions that create this nonsense. You can be whatever you want. Let's give dolls to boys. This is what they used to say. Let's give dolls to boys. They'll play with them. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. You give a doll to a boy, he'll play with it. You know what he plays? Pull a cut off. That's what he plays. You know what he plays? He plays, how many M80s does it take to blow the crap out of Barbie? That's what a guy plays. Why? Because we're different. We're different. Mm-hmm. We are designed with a different spirit. We have been given testosterone. We have been given this idea of being strong and warriors and leaders. And we have to be disciplined in that area because we are no longer living in a scenario that we've been corrected because of sin. So we have to learn the discipline of not going off on everything that we desire, especially men and sexuality, because that's something that really drives us out of control. And so we seek to find ways to use that great, amazing sexual energy, but drive it towards our wives, and also culturally, how to just sort of go out and fight in strength. It's a very unique thing as a Christian, because you are a servant warrior. You're not allowed to kill people that disagree with you, but you are allowed to defend against injustice. You are allowed to defend against evil and against innocence being destroyed. So that's really what I wanted to bring to the table, was sort of that re-energizing of the Christian man to understand it's okay to be a guy. it's okay. When I go do men's conferences, and I do a lot of them other than Promise Keepers over the years, men bring me in because of other teachings that I've done on men. You know, that's what I say to people. Say, you know, men need a day where they're just honored for being men. I mean, you go to church and it's kind of like, you know, it's Mother's Day. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's Mother's Day. Let's put out some carpeting, red carpets. We'll have flower petals thrown and tossed as they walk. Each one, the mother will get a bouquet. We'll sit them on a cushion while we stick them on special seats carried by Nubian slaves while they're being fanned by you know, special trained donkeys. And then we'll sit them down and we'll all pass their shadows so we can get healed. That becomes Mother's Day. And nothing wrong with it. God bless the mothers. Here comes Father's Day. Well, welcome to Father's Day, and today we're going to talk about how you can be a better father. Today we're going to talk about how you're screwing up as a man and a warrior, and we want to really teach you how to go out there and learn how to do it better. So this is absurd. Why can't we just celebrate our masculinity? Obviously, we need to change things. Obviously, we need to repent of things we're not doing right. Obviously, we're seeking the heart of Christ. And so that's the journey we're on. But give us an opportunity to have a attaboy father pat on the back to say, you're working hard, son. You're trying. You're pushing. You're standing for righteousness and truth. And I want to encourage to keep fighting that fight and that battle and that you can make it. You know, I needed to give men the excuse and the permission to know that who you are and how you were made was unique and specific in the universe. You know, men were made of dust initially.
Right.
That's why when we get dirty, you know, we like it. We're like, it's like a family reunion. We just get me greasy, dirty, I'm good. But then he breathed life into his nostrils and he became a living soul. We became spirit embodied in unison. And then God said, that's not enough. You know, I need to make something exactly like you, but completely different. I got to make something that you're going to love and desire, and it's going to drive you out of your mind. And so he gave us her. He took from our rib, made a woman, a womb man. From man's womb she came. That's right. Men were the first ones to give birth. Then we stepped back, observed our handiwork, and said, okay, ladies, you can take it from here. I've got a game to watch.
So right.
the whole idea was that the beautiful thing about women is God said after a woman was created, it is very good. Very good. It was only said after women were created because they are, in fact, the completion of the universe. And I have no problem with that. They've got all the parts I want. Trust me, I love my wife and what her femininity is. But God made men first. He had a special relationship with them. Special expectation that they would tend to the ground that they were given. They would tend to the gifts that God had given to them, and that they would utilize them in a way that would be God-honoring and culturally honoring and ultimately able to bring peace to the earth if possible, to bring artistic elements, to bring intellectual ideas and thoughts, all coming from God, that we can have access to if we see, and give it back to culture with the idea and hope of redeeming the earth back to Eden. We're never going to get there. Not as sinners, but we're supposed
not
to.
Not here, yeah.
We're supposed
you
to
know, cross. Brad, the one of the problems I think we have in the American church, it has been feminized. I mean, I think it's somewhere 60-40 church attendance, around there, you know, women to men. And that's because I think so much of the church today is built on feelings rather than logic. Now, I'm not saying that all men are logical and all women are feeling-oriented. They're not necessarily. But women are generally more motivated by emotion, whereas men are generally more motivated by the facts and reason and all that. Again, I'm not making a blanket statement. I'm just noticing trends. We are wired a little bit differently. And yet what we get at church is all about how Jesus loves you and you love Jesus. And look, men don't have a romance with Jesus. I know there's a book out there called Sacred Romance and all this, but generally men aren't wired that way. I mean, we're not wired for that. We're not.
No, we're not. I actually do that at men's events sometimes. I'll say, okay, I want you just to think of Jesus, and I want you to tell me the words that you're used to hearing when we speak of Jesus. And this is the men's event. Now, I'll say, what do you love? He's loving. Is tender? Mercy? Yes. Yeah. Forgiving? Yes. Humble? Grace? Yes. All beautiful, true words. And by the way, feminine words. They are true. They are true. There are times when I need the feminine element of God. Obviously, he's both, because he said he made them in his image. So he has that other perspective of himself that he gave to women. And at times when I need the mom to kiss my boo-boos and to help me and make me feel better. But then there's table tipping Jesus. Then there's righteous indignation Jesus.
The Matthew 23 Jesus.
Masculine Jesus. Yeah. Yes, right. The Jesus that got into his face and said, hey, I know you're a big shot around here, and I know you are the superstar of your religious community. I tell you what you really are. You're whitewashed tombs. You look really good on the outside, but you're dead inside. And I'm right in front of your face saying so. Oh, really? You don't want me to heal that guy's arm because it might accidentally disrupt your legalistic perspective on how the world has to work, that we have to be oppressed constantly to prove that God loves us? No, I'm going to heal it right in front of your face, and what are you going to do about it? There was a righteous indignation that came not from having him hate people or try to judge people in some perspective that was malicious. He was saying, I'm going to expose people. This whole idea of you shouldn't judge. What are you talking about? If you shouldn't judge as in I'm better than you or I'm superior intrinsically, you're right. But if judge means to assess truth and behavior and make a claim about that, not only am I supposed to judge, it's a commandment. I'm supposed to
pick
the things of God and speak them out so that others might have a shot at changing. So again, The feminization of Jesus, what do we see? Even in the pictures, he's got these long flowing robes, and he's got this great hair, and it's just his skin is perfect, and he's always carrying a lamb around his neck. You think it would shake him in the desert, but he never puts it down, and he walks around to everybody, and you know, we turned him into a bearded lady. He was a man. He was a powerful. He went to men to start his church. He went to some cussing, whoring fishermen and said, going to start this. Trust me, he didn't go to them saying, follow me, guys. Come on, you know, put your nets down. Put your nets down. We're fishing for men now. Let's go. He didn't do that. He didn't do that. Why? Because men only follow men they respect. You see, the problem that the church has done at points, and again, I'm not saying it was done maliciously. Obviously, they're trying to relate to people and connect people and give people a sense of hope and love and tenderness. I get it. But they have to understand, like you said, men are wired differently. And we don't have a problem humbling ourselves in front of others. But who is it that men want to sing to? Who is it men that want to fight for? Who will they bow their knee in front of? What type of man will they do that for without hindrance? Without in any way double checking their spirit. They'll do it for a father, and they'll do it for a king.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to that. We're used to bowing our knee to that, because that's a man of honor, a man of integrity, man of power.
A warrior.
Who also honors and loves us. Yes, but he also honors and loves us, and we will fight for him.
That's
right. We need that type of man to fight. And in this case, in this day and age, Frank, in America, we need an intellectual warrior. We need a philosophical warrior. We need the artistic warriors. I really believe you've got to use the art in this season in America to reach out.
Well, Brad, can you believe we're out of time, man? We're out
of
time.
Are you kidding me?
We're out of it, baby.
There's no such thing as time. It's all relative. You should know that by now.
That's Brad Stein, ladies and gentlemen. BradStein.com, STINE.com. Check him out. Invite him to your church. Thanks, Brad. Thanks for being on.
I don't know where else I'd rather be.
All right, that's Brad Stein, ladies and gentlemen. See you next week. God bless.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.